The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hello, Jen. It's Chris from Vanishing Point. How are you, man?
Good. How are you doing? That was,
I'm doing all right.
I was just like, you know, I hope he's one of these guys that cooks up last minute because I haven't heard anything yet.
Sorry, man. I actually had to drive the other side of town in Melbourne because I picked up a new amp this morning, and I was driving on the way back home, and I'm thinking, fuck, the traffic's really terrible. So I only just made it here about 15 minutes ago. I'm thinking, right, I've got an interview at 1 o'clock. I'm on it. So what's been happening with you, man?
Well, you know, it's been busy up here, but you don't get into my life. Who cares about me?
It's all good, man. It's all good.
How about your end? How's the weather down under?
Actually, it's not too bad, man. Today it's a little bit overcast, and it's quite humid, though. There's breaks of sunshine in and out, but it's been awfully humid the last couple of days. It's probably about 23 degrees, 24 degrees today,
Wow. But
quite high humidity, and then I think tomorrow it's going to be raining. Sunday we've got 28 degrees, and that's with rain, and then Monday I think it's going to be rain as well. So I think we're due about for probably about a good 4 or 5 days of quite high humidity, which sucks. But, yeah, man, look, the garden's getting a watering from the rain, more or less, so it's not too bad.
And, you know, I wish we had the 22, 23 degrees Celsius up here. It's freezing.
And what temperature you guys got at the moment there, man?
I think it's below freezing, so I guess that for you guys that would be about, what, zero? I mean, we're almost having like a second winter. It started warming up and then right away snap right back. And, you know, just up north of us, like in Halifax and all that, they actually got snow. We didn't get snow, but it's that kind of weather.
Well, whereabouts in the U.S. are you, bro?
New York City.
Ah, fantastic, man. New York. Fantastic, man. I've been speaking to one of the guys, especially a couple of weeks ago, I was speaking to some of the guys from the U.S. as well, and they were telling me about, like, the freezing weather you guys have had and all the shit weather and how it's basically brought the country to a standstill in certain parts.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually been one of the worst winters we've had in a while, which is surprising because we've had so many where it's like, you know, green Christmases and the whole deal, and then this year was just one snowstorm after another, just right on top of each other. We need to get a chance to clean up.
Shit. Well, we've been relatively lucky, I mean, with this summer here that it hasn't been like, it's been hot, but we haven't had too many bushfires, thankfully.
Yeah.
But there's been sometimes, you know, with the summer we've had a few bushfires burning, but not as bad as it was, you know, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. But still, you know, when we get the bushfires here, they are pretty bloody scary, and you get a lot of smoke around the place, so.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you guys get so much desert out there now thanks to all the rabbits, so.
Mitosis and foxes for that, man.
But, you know, I'll try to refrain from making any Paul Hogan cracks or anything about grown-up shrimp on the Barbie or the bushwhacker.
Whatever you want to ask me, or just put any refrains in there whatsoever, man. So good as far as the interview. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and go, it's our best and heaviest album yet and all that bullshit. So let's just go with the flow, man. It's all good.
Well, I will say that I'm a big fan of Richard Norton, you know, the kickboxing star. So.
I don't even know the dude, man.
All right, Mike, okay. If you're still with me after that opener, you're rolling to your face.
I'm all good, man. Can you hear me nice and clear from here, bro?
Oh, you're crystal clear.
Awesome, man. Awesome. All right, let's do it, bro.
All right, halfway around the world and some of the best reception I've gotten.
It's better than my mobile phone reception locally, man.
Listen to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight, we're living in the land down under and hunting rabbits with Chris Prochanko of Vanishing Point on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and welcome to Third Eye Cinema, your source for music and film that matter. Cult, underground, independent, and generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Tonight, we speak with one of the two men behind a long-running symphonic metal band with a difference. Joining the band shortly after the recording of their debut album, he and vocalist Silvio Massaro have taken over and held the flag of bombastic, melodic, and uniquely emotional European-style metal for the better part of their nearly two-decade-long career. One of the few notable bands of its genre and approach to hail from the nation that brought us Crocodile Dundee, kickboxer Richard Norton, wrestlers The Bushwhackers, and the Vegemite Sandwich, they survived both personal loss and the departure of the entire original lineup to deliver what may very well be the crowning jewel in their 20-plus year career. Join us for an entertaining conversation with one of Australia's finest, the one and only Chris Pachanko of Vanishing Point, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Chris and Vanishing Point getting a bit introspective, telling us how they're both beyond redemption and the king of empty promises. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with a special guest tonight, Chris Pachanko of Vanishing Point. Stay tuned.
From Rhapsody of Fire, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy!
This is Lanval from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
So, hi there, this is Georg and Thomas from Serenity, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is DC Cooper, and you are listening... Hi, this is DC Cooper from Royal Hunt, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everybody out there. This is Micah Kiska speaking, singing for Unisonic in Plasma Dome, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, everybody. Shall I start again? Okay. Hi, everybody. Alex from Atrocity. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy the day.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Lee Christine from Neve Size, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema. Rock on.
Hey, this is Davey Vane from Vane. I want you to get very close to your speakers right now, right up against your speakers, because you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Tonight, we're talking metal, and we have with us a man who has played a long-standing and very important part in the career of one of the few notable symphonic metal bands to hail from the nation that brought us the Vegemite sandwich. With a fairly complicated history and a continually rotating lineup, they've recently released what may very well be the crowning jewel in their 20-plus year career, the excellent Distant is the Sun. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming guitarist and co-band leader Chris Borsianko of Vanishing Point. Chris, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Thank you very much, man, and hello to all the listeners out there.
So first off, I've got to ask, how much of an obstacle to touring and comparative success is it being more or less half a world away in the land down under?
It's pretty hard due to the distance factor from the mainland, from Europe and also you guys. So it is quite expensive with flights and all that. And it can be rather expensive touring within Australia as well. Like we're driving up to Sydney next week. We're playing alongside Royal Hunt, supporting them for two shows. And we're driving from Melbourne to Sydney, and that's 1,000 kilometres one way, and we're driving back the next day. So it's 1,000 kilometres back home. So, yeah, you've got a few kilometres in between cities and, stations and towns, etc. But, yeah, it can be expensive, but we just do it because we enjoy it.
Yeah, because, forget touring the U.S. I think even mounting a European tour is something of a trek and a major life event. Because it's like a full day's travel just to get to London.
That's it. That's exactly right, man. So, for us, it's more or less a situation that, we've done touring in the past, and unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to come to America. So we're really hoping with Distant as the Sun that rectifies the situation, and we hope to get a chance to get over to America. We get a lot of fan mail and emails from people from all around the world, especially the US, saying, when are you guys coming over? Unfortunately, we haven't had any bites yet, but we're hoping with this album we'll be able to get over there and, play to you guys and meet up with everybody and just make the hard yards over. We don't mind. It's what we've been doing for years. We're used to eating 2-minute noodles and Vegemite sandwiches, as you mentioned. So, it's not a problem for us, man. It's situation normal.
it'd be great to see you guys. So if you do make it out this way, give me a heads up.
Definitely will, man. Definitely will. Thank you.
But, I guess that, it's a strange thing, but I guess touring Asia must be pretty easy for you guys, given the relative distance factor, eh?
That's an interesting question, because that's what's happening later on this year. It looks like we're going to be touring Southeast Asia, so that's a little bit more affordable, more or less, and closer for sure. I mean, and this is the thing too, if it's not a money situation, it's also while we want to tour, and we will be touring in the future, it's also a time factor away from the family as well, because we all have families, and we don't want to be away from the families for too long, but at the same time too, we understand that touring does take us away for a long time. So if we can get to some grounds that are closer by initially at the start, and then to like wean our way into touring further distances and maybe wean our partners' opinions in regards to touring. It's a good start. It's better to jump into the shallow end, so to speak, instead of the deep end. And I'm sure that every musician out there goes through the same thing.
But, you know, in terms of genre and style, there really aren't that many bands in, like, you know, the gothic, symphonic, or power metal field that I'm aware of hailing from Australia. You know, you guys seem to be more salt-of-the-earth, no-nonsense types, you know, bands like AC/DC and Oz, or even early Rick Springfield. I mean, it's more basic balls-to-the-wall rock and roll. So
yeah.
Right there, you're kind of an anomaly. So how is it for you in your home country? Do you have a big following, or is it pretty much hard work all the way through?
It's a bit of both, actually. Just an interesting side note is, actually, where I grew up in a place called Brandon Park is not even 6 or 7 kilometres away from where Rick Springfield used to go to high school. For anybody that's information out there, for all the Rick Springfield buffs out there. But in regards to the way that Vanishing Point music is within the Australian scene, look, it's not bad, man, because, I mean, we do have some other bands here that are starting to do this music as well. A band that I could probably, I'm just trying to think, that's doing this type of music that's similar to us, but it's got female vocals, is Divine Ascension. They're from the other side of the city. They're doing really well. And, of course, we've got Eye Fear and bands like Black Majesty, which are more, you know, power metal in fiber. But, we've got a few bands, you know, doing this stuff. Australia's been, the metal scene in Australia has been predominantly death metal scene for a long time as well, the underground scene. So it's one of them things we just go with the flow. And, yeah, it is a battle sometimes, but at the same time, we're playing festivals with a lot of the heavier bands too. There's a mutual respect between all the bands. We're all doing it the same way. We're all struggling. You know, we're all doing it because we enjoy it. So there is a, you know, there's no animosity or anything like that. And, you know, we tend to get good crowds here and there, which is good.
And it's funny because you mentioned the death metal and underground scene in Australia, and you're right, because you are actually the home of the infamous Mortification also, who put out that black metal or unblack metal album, Horde.
So, yeah, no. Absolutely. Jason Shaw, like the drummer, yeah, absolutely, yeah. He put himself anonymous. Which I think is absolutely brilliant. But, yeah, I mean, Mortification, and that, like, I'm actually friends with Jason for a long time now. He's an amazing drummer, amazing musician, a great guy. And when he was playing with Mortification too, I mean, they released, you know, great albums like death metal albums like Scrolls and Megaloth, etc.
Yeah.
too. So, you know, irrespective of a political slant or sort of religious, you know, ideals or whatever, I mean, it was just great music back then for what it was. At the same time too, we've had a lot of bands here. I mean, from Melbourne, we've got bands like Bloodduster, etc., and King Parrot and stuff like that doing good things. But I mean, like in Tasmania, you've got bands like Psyproptic, etc. Sydney used to have Mortals in. A lot of bands doing good things, you know. I mean, so I'm pretty proud of the scene we've got here, man, to be honest with you.
I mean, for all the jokes I'm making, you don't have to convince me because I'm pretty open. You know, we're making jokes about Rick Springfield, but Work Last Dog's still one of my favorite albums. So.
You know what? Funny enough, the cover band scene, when I started playing music many years ago, Jesse's Girl was a song that we had to do because if we didn't do it, you know, it was pretty much everybody was going to ask us anyway. It was like Jesse's Girl, Songs by Cultures, and all that boring shit, but you know, hey, that happens. You know, it's a typical, you know, 3-4 chords.
That's it. It's really straight ahead. And then he had Neil Giraldo from Pat Benatar's group doing the solos. It's a perfect album for what it is.
And that's the thing. There's just good songs. And I suppose a lot of people ask me this question, you know, I mean, how, you know, what kind of music do you like? And I just go, I like good music. You know, it doesn't matter, irrespective of the genre. You know, if it's a good song, it's a good song. So all them songs from so many years ago, they still hold really well in the memory, more or less.
You actually came about during a period of time that was particularly rough for metal worldwide, which was the early 90s, with the band's first record only released near the end of that decade. Now, you were involved with that first album, so it may be a bit speculative, but do you know what inspired Tommy and the original guys to take up the mantle everyone else more or less threw off in some measure of shame for that decade? And does that play any part into why it took Vanishing Point several years to get that first album out?
You know, it's an interesting question because I suppose I actually visited the guys when they were recording the album, Green Thought, just popping in to say g'day, because the keyboard player who played that band, that song, was Pep Sammartino. And Pepe and I were in a previous band that I had started called Mindscape, which became Mindstate. It was more of a progressive metal band. With the Vanishing Point guys, all I knew is that the guys just wanted to do just melodic music, you know, back then. It was like, you know, whether it had a bit of a power metal feel, a bit of a progressive metal feel, I just wanted to do melodic music. So Tommy, from what I knew of back then, was very focused on melody. And when I had the opportunity 2 years later to join the band, it was always discussed that, you know, look, this is a band that, irrespective of how many riffs is in the song, it's just trying to write catchy, good melodic songs. And for me, I was lucky to step into that role because that's what I was naturally doing anyway. I came from a band that was more or less doing very technical stuff, and I was more than happy to go to a band that was doing sometimes only three or four chord changes in a song. In regards to the tags that were affiliated with Vanishing Point, you know, sort of with the progressive metal, power metal type of stuff in the late 90s, truth be known, we didn't really pay attention to it. I mean, it was always a situation for us like, you know, look, man, just put the music out there and see how it goes. You know, we didn't have any big management. We did have previous management, but we didn't have any big management saying, okay, this is what your sound is or anything like that. It was just like, just do the music, you know, and let the people out there who listen to the music judge for themselves what they think of it. I mean, I'm not here, and either of the guys, we're not here to impart on the world any type of, you know, thinking, you know, or some revolutionary thinking, the way that people should live their lives. It's just, we just write songs, man.
Yeah.
You know, for the day, and that's it.
The timeline of releases in the Vanishing Point discography is somewhat erratic as well. I mean, instead of the usual one album every 2 years or so, there's one in 97, there's one in 2000, there's nothing for 5 years, then 2005, again 2007,
yes.
And then there's another long delay, 7 years until this one. So other than personnel changes, which included yourself and Silvio joining the band,
yes,
him not long before the release of debut and yourself just after, and eventually
yes,
the loss of all the founding members, what
yes
was playing into such an erratic release schedule? I mean, there had to be a lot going on behind the scenes.
Look, man, it was a thing that, you know, and these are really good questions because it probably gives me a good opportunity to, like, you know, really put out on the table what had actually happened. It was more or less a situation that we were signed and then we weren't signed. After Tangled in Dream, we did a lot of touring. We toured Europe in 2001. We were in Europe in 2000 and 2001. Came back from Europe at the end of 2001. Basically, 2002, we were all broke. We were just totally, completely, and utterly broke. There was a lot of problems with our previous management. We ended up firing our management. There was a lot of... We just ended up being so broke, it was ridiculous. And so the thing was, okay, let's just write the next album, see how we go. And it took a lot of time because back then we were writing as a band. It wasn't like, you know, one guy's got a recording studio set up and composing predominantly from home.
Right.
It was the band getting together three times a week and writing the music together as a band.
Well, that's the best way.
Yeah, and it's a great way to do it, but at the same time too, like, you know, for me, every time I was going to rehearsal with the guys, I was driving from the eastern suburbs, southeastern suburbs to the western suburbs three times a week, you know, and I was doing night shift by that time for my work as well. So it was Tuesday nights, Thursday nights, and Sunday afternoon, Sunday nights that I was rehearsing with the band.
Right.
And then as soon as band rehearsal would finish, I'd be back in my car driving off to work, which work from where rehearsal was 150 kilometres away.
Oh,
and I was working a whole night's work. So, and I was doing this, man, just to pay the bills, just to, like, get on top of the loans that I had taken out for touring.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of money that we owed as well. So it took a long time to get that all sorted out. 2005 came along with Embrace and Silence, and we were with Dockyard One. Shortly after that, in 2007, the fourth season came out. We did touring in 2008 in Europe, supporting the Sonata Arctica. We supported Iron Maiden here in Australia, Joe Satriani, Halloween, and many other bands, including also our own headline shows. We came back 2009, we were writing, playing our own shows. 2010, just before then, our record label went bust because the GFC hit. So a lot of the money, or whatever sales that we had from the fourth season and from Embrace of Silence, man, that just disappeared because it all went bust, and we were just like, shit. We're stuck here at ground one again, and we've got to try to pay off our bills, etc. And so, look, it was a hard time, and it was getting to a point that in 2010 with the previous guys, and I say this with utmost respect to the previous guys because we still get along with a lot of them a lot, doing quite well. But the honest truth was, it was playing a vital role. It's like, how much money can we put into this anymore? We're always losing money to the point, it's not just like, you know, a couple thousands, but we're talking thousands upon thousands of dollars were lost.
Wow.
You know? And there was just loose ends everywhere, man. It was, in Australia, we have this saying, it was like a dog's breakfast. And that's what it was, man. It was a dog's breakfast, and it took us a long time to get, you know, past that. And three guys left in 2010, and truth be known, the band didn't really exist probably about a good 3-4 months. I had my own recording studio set up by this time, and I was starting to look into you know, just recording my own music for a while, but I started writing and ended up being just automatically VP tunes. And so Christian and Silvio came along, we had a listen, we said, stuff it, let's just keep on going, regardless of what the costs are, just stay the course and see what happens. And so we took time out, wrote the album, and here we are today, man.
Wow.
We're not as broke this time, thank God.
Yeah. And again, this falls a little before you joined the band, but how did Silvio get involved in the first place? Because I always thought of Australia as being primarily British and Celtic roots, but here you have a full-blood Italian front in the band.
Yeah, that's interesting because Silvio was born in Australia like the rest of us were, but Silvio from Italian background, Tommy and Jack back then, they're from Croatian Montenegrin backgrounds. Joe Del Mastro, of course, Italian background. Then when I joined the band, my parents are Polish. I was born here. We're all born here, but we're all from, you know, European backgrounds. So we naturally had that probably European feel in our music. But, you know, I think that the first guy who's joined the band has pretty much been Australian. Is Simon Best, our bass player now, and James Mayer, who's actually part Canadian background. But they're all born here, you know, so.
Wow.
Yeah, but Silvio Massaro, yeah, he's got a bit of that Italian twang in his voice, so yeah.
I can't even express how far Vanishing Point has come since 97's In Thought, vocally and musically. And the sound's gotten so much more full and more powerful. It was almost like comparing the new album to Midnight Oil or something. But what's really surprising is that there's been a nigh total makeover, even since your last album, The Fourth Season. You know, it's like comparing Camelot's The Fourth Legacy to The Black Halo. I mean, there's that much of a stylistic and production shift here. So what happened?
I had time to basically, you know, write the songs in my own studio. And it was a process that actually I found, to be honest with you, I found quite liberating because there wasn't any arguments this time. There wasn't any, like, you know, major differences of opinion, whereas I found that probably with the previous stuff, in the past, dare I say, there was sometimes there was substitutes given for everybody to be happy, and that's what you do, you compromise to a degree. But I felt that in some of the previous albums that things could have been better with certain things if we would have gone about them a certain way. That's probably me looking at it in retrospect, and that's, of course, only my opinion as well. But with this album, with This Is The Sun, I pretty much had the chance to write the whole album myself with Christian assisting. And it was more or less, I went with the flow, I didn't have a map in front of me, but all I knew was, I'm just going to write songs, I'm going to write songs to the best of my ability as a person, but also as a musician, and see what happens. And thankfully, I've had really good musicians behind me. It's the first time that Christian actually had a chance to play the drums on an album, because with The Fourth Season, it was Jack Lukic, the previous drummer, who played on there. So this is also, although Christian has been in the band since 2007, this is actually his debut on the Vanishing Point album as well.
Really?
Yeah, so because he never recorded the drums on The Fourth Season, it was Jack.
Wow.
And so Christian joined the band after The Fourth Season was completed. So, look, it's good to have a lineup of people who are really, really into their instruments and really just want to do something with it. And it gives old-timers like Silvio and myself a bit of a kick in the pants as well, which is good. Now, I'm turning 43 this year, but, I mean, I'll be honest with you, with Vanishing Point, it feels so much fresher than what it had been for the last 10 years.
And it sounds it, too. That's what I was trying to get at. Your music, at least here on This In The Sun, is intensely emotional. I mean, it's very much metal, but it's got strong influences of the gothic symphonic scene in its heyday back in the 2000s. And moreover, it has that sort of like tug at your insides feel that you get with a better emo band, not only in the lyrics, but in the music. You know, it's powerful, but at the same time, it's clearly full of like intense emotional pain, really. So I gather there's a good reason for this, because I had heard that somebody, I don't know if it was you or Silvio, had come through some fairly heavy personal matters of late.
Yeah, sure, man. I'm not afraid to say it, man. Look, you know, Silvio's gone through some changes in his life and all that, and also back in 2012, in April 2012, while recording this album, I lost my father. And my father passed away, and it was just like, well, you know, these things happen, and while it's hard to speak about it, it's like I have to speak about it how a son would for his father. You know, I love my father dearly. We had a lot of problems. We had a lot of differences. But at the same time, too, I know that my father would have said, look, just go for it. Just keep going. Steer the course. And my father's famous saying was, just rip into it. Rip into it. And so that's what I did. As hard as it was, I had to keep on going. I couldn't let it get me down. And although it was hard, and, you know, anybody who's lost a friend or a parent or anybody or somebody in the family, you know, I now finally feel and I understand what they feel. And I had that, I was coming to grips with that understanding and accepting more or less you know, during the album process, which was hard. But I suppose in a way, subconsciously, that reflected on the music. At the same time, too, I'm a really big fan of a massive emotive music. I like to tug at my own heartstrings when I'm writing a song. To me, if it doesn't give me goosebumps, it doesn't make me feel something, then to me it's like, yeah, it's okay, but it does nothing. To me, I want to communicate with the listener, you know, whether it be within the melody of the music or the lyrics or the way that the Silvio is singing or where the guitar solos are or the movements of the music. To me, it's an emotional journey that I want people to experience with us, more or less, not against us. You know what I mean? It's like we're in it together. You know, if it brings a smile to you, fantastic. If it gives a little bit of a tear in your eye, that's a cool thing too, because maybe the music can be that vehicle for people to maybe come to grips with certain things emotionally, like I did. I didn't lose myself or immerse myself with alcohol or drugs or anything like that. And I don't drink. I don't take drugs. In fact, I gave up cigarettes last year. So for me, it's like I'm totally clean, apart from eating the odd junk food, whatever, and drinking coffee. This is probably my vice. But the music for me is... I know this sounds really wanky and stuff like that, but the music for me is the ultimate cathartic release. To me, if I don't have the music, then I have to probably go see a psychologist. You know, because it's a positive medium to get the music out there and to get what I feel and probably what other people are understanding at the same time too, because VP's music's always been about life, man. It hasn't been about, you know, Dungeons or Dragons or some kind of, you know, super intergalactic aerospace mission or some bullshit. It's just about life, man, and that's why people probably can relate to what we do. But it was a hard time, man. It was a hard time, but at the same time, too, it's just one of them things that happens. That's the cards that life gives you, and, you know, it's either play the cards or sit behind and fold, you know, and I wasn't going to fold, and I wasn't going to fold in my father's honor either.
Yeah, and I mean, I totally am agree with you because, you know, I lost my father at a fairly young age, and I know exactly how that impacts you. And once again, like you said, I mean, music, when it's done properly, is really supposed to be something emotional, not just something intellectual. And when you go through something like that, that can get you through, you know, because otherwise, who knows? You know, when you get that intense about something, especially when you have a conflicted relationship like you said you had, and I know I have my father. It was definitely a love-hate thing.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, like, I'm saying this too. Look, I'm going to probably sound really deep and emotional here, but, you know, the day that I buried my father was the same day that another state, a friend of mine through Facebook, actually buried his 3-week-old daughter. Mm. And her name was Ruby Red Day. And he asked all his friends through Facebook whatever to wear something red. So on that day that I buried my father, I wore a red tie on his daughter's honour. I was happy that I was fortunate that for the 40 years back then, when I was with my father passed away, for the 40 years that I knew my father, I cherish a lot of what I knew. You know, there's other people in other circumstances who don't get a chance to fulfill even 4 years, let alone 4 months, with their loved ones before they go their separate ways in life. So, look, at the same time, man, I'm fortunate with what I have, you know, and I feel and I hear what people are saying, you know, and like, I've got a lot of emails from people in the past and even currently just saying, look, this album's really pulled us through some heavy shit. And, you know, I'm happy about that, man.
And, you know, on top of all this heavy stuff, you had the band more or less coming apart at the seams. So
yeah.
I've heard it said that out of great pain comes great art. And this is definitely one of those cases that proves the point. You know, I don't think that I'm exaggerating to say that this is by far the best album Vanishing Point has put out. I'd say I can't wait for the next one, but if this is what it takes to make a record like this, I wouldn't wish it on you.
Thank you very much, man. Look, and the honest truth is, actually, there's really some songs that I've been composing for the next album and all that. I'm a bit of a melancholic bastard anyway, so, I mean, I can have a laugh like anybody else. I mean, I'm not depressed or anything like that, but, I mean, you know, I'm a pretty emotional person as well, so I can wear my heart on my sleeve. At the same time, I can tell things for how they are. And in most cases, the way that I feel about things is the way that I portray it within the music that I create. I love, like, a lot of genres of music. I love, dare I say, death metal, et cetera, and all that, you know, for the sheer intensity that it has. But I can't relate to it, musically speaking, because it's not melodic or doesn't have much emotion for me. It has, like, a one-directional type of energy, which is really intense. That's probably why, naturally, with the music that I create, that's what comes out in Vanishing Point. And I listen probably more to death metal and black metal than I do to this type of music, but at the same time, too, this is naturally what comes out of me when I write music, and so I'm fortunate that I have this vehicle to use.
I totally hear that. And just touching on a lot of those things we were just talking about, you know, the emo thing is definitely there in your sound, especially in the multiple changes to time signature that you hear in King of Empty Promises. You could easily toss progressive metal into the mix, but again, like we're saying, that's usually kind of empty and soulless. It's musician's music. It's not something people connect with emotionally. Whereas what you're doing, you know, that's a very different story.
Yeah, it's like a pasta, man, basically. Look, at the end of the day, we have this thing that, you know, if we feel the song is good, the song is good. And we have this saying that at the end of the day, the song is never complete until it's completely recorded and mastered on CD. Because always at the last minute, there could be a couple little changes here or there. And Sylvia Massaro, you know, God bless him, but she loves to try a curveball once in a while. And, you know, that's probably why I have no hair, because the recording sessions sometimes are like, everything will be flowing, and then he'll ring me up and go, he'll say, you know, Chris, I like this song a lot, but I'm not understanding how you want me to sing the verse, etc. So there I have to go to the studio and show him what I'm thinking, and I can't sing for shit. I'm like, la, 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 la. Probably sound like a chipmunk on speed or acid, whatever. And then he just goes, okay, I get what you mean. But, you know, the music's never finished until it's on CD, more or less. But, you know, it's one of them things that we just go with whatever sounds good. You know, if it's got some time changes, got some key changes, it's got some progressive, you know, elements, whatever. At the end of the day, whatever sounds good is good. There's no set formula, there's no set map, so to speak. I mean, everything's just because it's how we felt about the song, more or less, instead of what we tried to achieve. We don't have any master plan or mapping in front of us when writing an album, going, okay, the album has to have 4 or 5 fast songs, and it has to have 3 or 4 ballads and all that bullshit. We just write, man. And truth be known, when the album was mastered, somebody said to me, how long does the album go for? And I rang up one of the guys. I said, look, you know, can you check the master? How long does the album actually go for? Because I didn't know. So, and because people were saying, oh, man, the album's so long, it's just over 60 or so minutes. They're going so long. I'm like, really? I mean, I said to him, you should have listened to Embrace the Silence, because we were worried actually that wasn't going to fit onto a CD format because it was just under 79 minutes.
But, you know, talking about the musicianship, then, I've got to say, Christian Nativo is one hell of a drummer. I was very impressed by his syncopation and off-time 4-against-3 on the hi-hat there.
Thanks, man. I'll tell him that tonight. He'll be rapt to hear that. Thank you.
And I have to ask, how did New Edition James Bushy Meyer get christened with his nickname, or do I not want to know?
Actually, interesting fact, because I asked him that same question a few months ago. I think it was when he was growing his hair. It was more of an afro-type thing. And growing down straight, I think, and because he used to have like a, he's got a beard now, but it was more or less like a, you know, big ginger beard. So I don't know if it looked like a really weird wolf, you know, version of Ronald McDonald or some shit. I don't know. He's always had that nickname, but, you know, that's what his close friends call him, whereas, and I think Christian calls James Bushy, whereas I've always said, hey, James, you know, what's going on? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, cool. So.
And you have some really nice riffing all over the album. Little things like the one that opens Distant as the Sun, or the bridge and verse on Denied Deliverance. You know, particularly when you get into gothic and symphonic metal, guitarists tend to get lazy and just do bar chords, and they let the keyboards and the vocalists carry the melody. It's like they've regressed to the earliest days of guitar, where it's just an entirely a rhythm instrument. But you're keeping things busier than most people in the genre that you're tapping into, and even tossing in some rather melodic solos. So I'm impressed with that.
Thanks, man. You know, and I really sincerely appreciate your words, and thank you. I'm blown away by your kindness, man. You know, I did some solos on the album too, but a lot of credit also goes to James as well. I left some solo sections on this album open for him because he hadn't joined the band yet, and the album had already been completed. So when he did join the band, I was really impressed with his guitar solo playing especially as well. So it's more or less, okay, we've done, for example, Denied Deliverance. The guitar solo section, I actually extended that twice over because James' initial solo, and I said to him, okay, show me what you would probably play on top of this section here. And the honest truth is the solo that he came up with initially there just off by heart was the solo that ended up being on the album.
Right.
Silk and I were just like really impressed by the technicality there. But his sense of melody was just like, wow. We could feel it. And I took to James, I said, it's probably one of my favorite solos of any Vanishing Point song ever done. And I've played over 40 solos in VP's career in the songs as well, from, you know, the previous albums as well. I was really blown away by James's playing, so I have to give credit to him as well. It was an album where if you hear even more the melodic stuff, like more of a mid-paced, that's my playing, where you hear all the sweeps and the arpeggios and some of the faster stuff with the melody, that's James's playing. He's an amazing guitarist and he's a great asset to the band, so it was really good to have him there. In regards to the rhythms and stuff like that I do, that's what I do naturally, to be honest with you, man. I'm not the type of guy who likes to always just sit on a bar chord. I like to move it a bit. I also like to use it as a percussive form of instrument as well, with the drums and with the bass, to give it that ball, give it that punch more or less. So I've always been a big fan of that. And I suppose, without blowing my own horn, I suppose it makes it sound less cheesy.
Yeah, you know, I'm a guitarist too, and I play the same way, but, you know, my sound doesn't really match into metal anymore, because metal has become, like I said, it's very percussive, it's very straight ahead and straightforward. You either get the tremolo thing like the black metal guys, or you get that straight ahead, just I'm going to sit on a bar chord forever, which is, you know, you get that in power metal, you get that in symphonic metal, it's all over the place. Whereas, you know, I like doing like you're talking about. It's busy. You know, my hands get bored just staying there on a chord for a while, so I've got to move around. And I hear that in what you're playing, so I really appreciate that.
Thanks, Ben. It's more of a thing that also being percussive also allows space for the orchestration that I was putting into the music as well. Yeah. And so it's not like it's a complete, you know, check the spaghetti if it's ready, throw it against the wall type of thing, if it's six, it's six thing. But it was more like, you know, let's create some space as well here, you know. Because when you're dealing with orchestration, which I did all the orchestration in my home studio, it's a big thing to do. And I had Christian editing the orchestration alongside with me and assisting me with it. It was like, okay, we've got to also do it within respect to the other instruments as well. Because with orchestration, you can make the thing sound huge, but it can also take away from some of the other instruments. So for me, naturally that's how my playing style is in rhythm, but it also allowed a lot of space for the orchestration. So it was a blessing in disguise in a sense. But look, man, I'm a fan of all different guitar players. You know, I think probably the older that I'm getting, the more I'm, like, you know, enjoying stuff like, you know, the old Pink Floyd. Like, for me, if anybody said to me, you know, what's your favourite guitar style probably over the last 5-10 years, I would probably say, you know, the solos that Dave Gilmour plays on Pink Floyd's The Wall album. You know, you know, I can hear him in my memory. I can hear it straight away even when I think about it. It's like, I know every note. I don't know how to play it, but I know how to sing every note within my mind. That to me is a great guitar solo.
Yeah.
You know, I've never understood this whole thing where a band would have a killer song and then the guitarist comes in and it's like, you know, it's like the curtains have opened and the sun has shone out the guitarist's ass and he's just going, yeah, here I am, now I'm going to completely blast this with like 1,000 notes. And then the listener's sitting there going, what the hell was all that about? and then the song goes back into the ballad that it was. I take the piss out of myself just like everybody else, but I think that the essence, in my opinion, the essence of creating music is create what you're capable of doing, but also try not to lose a listener, because it's a listener at the end of the day who's really enjoying your music as well. And if you're going to play 1,000 notes and 1,000 miles an hour, you know, you're going to impress maybe the guitar heads, all that type of stuff, but the average listener's just going to say, what the hell was that? Was it, you know, was it a wind tunnel tested car going through a tunnel or something like that? I don't know, you know. To me, like, music is to be enjoyed, not always, how could you say, looked upon as a gymnastic type of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I actually use that argument a lot when I talk about progressive metal, or even when you talk about death metal, about math metal and things like that. It's just, I understand it, I appreciate what they're doing, I know these guys are good players, but it doesn't work for me. You know, it's not. It doesn't. You don't feel it. It's an intellectual thing.
Yeah, and in all due respect with some of the technical styles, I mean, like there is a lot of bands that are doing great things within the technical genre of death metal. If somebody was to say to me, okay, in terms of technical death metal, what technical death metal album is your favorite? I would say, well, I would go back to like the Death Human album, or, you know, stuff like Symbolic by Death. You know, back then, that for me was technical death metal with, like, you know, progressive metal influences that I really enjoyed, but still it was heavy as shit, you know, whereas the stuff these days, there's a lot of notes and it's heavy in some parts, but then it gets really light to the point of being cheesy. I don't know. You know, that's my take on it anyway.
And, you know, we were talking earlier about the Night of Deliverance. Christian's work on the kit and playing against Meteor, I mentioned that. He does that all over that one and King of Empty Promises. I mean, those two are really the most noticeable drum-wise. So, you know, it's not too often that I get bands where, you know, at least in the metal genre, where I sit back and I'm actually sitting there paying attention to one specific, like, okay, let me hear what the drummer's doing. Let me hear what the guitarist is doing. That doesn't happen anymore. It used to happen all the time. But nowadays it's like, you know, I'm just kind of listening to the piece as a whole. And the fact that I was able to do that with you guys, that you kept me engaged, really said, hey, this is a good album. I want to talk to this guy.
Thanks, man. Thank you very much. You know, I'm sincerely blown away by your kind words, man. Thank you very much for that, man. Honest truth is, it was really a pleasure working with Christian in writing and doing the editing for this album, because it was good to have somebody that was like, okay, Chris, I'm going to try this. And I think the guitar should follow this as well. And I'm like, you know, automatically thinking like, well, that's what I was thinking anyway, man. So it was a mutual exchange of ideas without really any differences. And everything was just flowing in that regard. We both like wanted the similar things, which is great. And I said to Christian, I said, look, man, you're a fantastic drummer. Give yourself a chance to shine. Just go for it. You know what I mean? I don't want to be sitting there now listening to your drum edits. If you think what you've done is on the album is great, I said, I trust your word. I'm totally happy with that. Whereas with previous albums, I was the guy who's sitting there overseeing the drum edits, you know what I mean? Because it was a different drummer, et cetera. So, I mean, I didn't want to be sitting in the studio for 3-4 days going over drum edits and, you know, moving snare samples or kick samples and all that shit. Christian had to do a couple of things, whatever, but a majority of it, that's what you hear of him playing. That's what you get on the album. It's really nice to have that there.
Yeah, I mean, and just to sum all that up, you know, between the guitars, the drums, and Silvio's soaring emotional vocals, you guys definitely give the more musically advanced listener plenty to pay attention to. So if you haven't heard the album already and you don't hear it, you're going to hear it at the opening and closing the interview anyway, but go out there and check this out, because this is one hell of a record to listen to.
Thanks, man. Leo, we take your influences really seriously, and, you know, of late, you know, we've been listening to a lot of Kylie Minogue and Rick Astley and Justin Bieber and all that shit, so we're really... You know, we really don't get any influences seriously. I'm just saying, like, a wanker now, but no, thank you very much, man. I don't know what to say. Thank you, man. Immensely thank you very much for the kind words.
And that's also some particularly gorgeous cover art, though. I'm seeing a lot of this sort of thing with AFM releases of late. Some of these full painted covers are absolutely stunning. Where did you find this person?
Okay, that's an interesting question. Basically, what had happened was we were looking through a lot of places on the internet, art designers, artwork. There's this website online called Deviant Art, and it's basically where a lot of artists put their artwork and an example of their galleries and all the artwork they've done on Deviant Art. And so it's actually quite easy to contact the artist through Deviant Art. It's like it's really good networking portal, more or less, and it's a good place where you can have a look at their artwork before contacting them. So we had a look at Anna Brakeel's work. She's actually I can't mention her surname because I can't remember it actually, but she's a young lady from Poland, and she's a great artist. We saw her artwork on DeviantArt under the Blakeyel header. That's her nickname. And there was her big gallery there of all her artwork. The artwork she did, we were just blown away by. We just thought it was really thought-provoking, visually appealing as well. And we said, look, this girl has got some really good things going. So the guy said, let's get in touch with her. So we made contact with her. And within 2 days, she got back to us. And she said, look, I'd love to do something and put some ideas forward. No worries. Within 2 weeks, we pretty much had the pretext for what the album cover is.
Wow.
That's how quick she works. She's very quick, very professional, very easy to work with. She understands, like, you know, what the bands are thinking. And she enjoys the music as well. So it was really, it was one of them things where everything just fell into place for once in regards to artwork, etc. Because we did have problems in the past with previous releases, whatever, you know, sometimes things didn't work out the plan, etc. And in one way, before we met Anna, it nearly didn't work out the plan with business at the time as well. But luckily we found Anna, and she did the cover, and it was a blessing in disguise. We were very lucky.
So any upcoming tour info, or did you want to point the listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, basically, if they want to check us out on Facebook, I think it's Vanishing Point Australia Unofficial or something like that. And if they want to check us out online, it's www.vanishing-point.com.au. In regards to touring, at the moment, we're looking upon, actually next week, on the 2nd of April, we're playing in Melbourne supporting Royal Hunt. And then on the 4th, we're playing in Sydney supporting Royal Hunt. This is also, like, in our southeast region of touring, more or less. Late April, we're off to New Zealand for 3 dates for our first mini headlining tour there. We come back, we've got a few more shows, I think in Melbourne, I think in early May, then we're playing the New Dead Festival in Adelaide, late May. June, we're just finalising a couple of dates in June. We're probably going to finally get a chance to do our album launch in June. In July, our drummer Christian goes to Japan with a band that he's helping out filling in for. So July's going to be a good chance maybe for some of us to actually get on top of things and maybe write some more music, which I'm always doing. You need to really focus on that then. And then I think it's later in the year for sure we're doing some Southeast Asian dates, which I can't mention like as it is completely confirmed, but it's going to be pretty good. One country we're looking at going to, there's 5 headlining shows already booked, and that's around about 80% booked. So yeah, things looking good. You know, I'm pretty sure that next year, hopefully we should be in Europe, and I'm sincerely hoping that we'll be in the U.S. next year.
Nice. Well, with that, Chris, I'd like to thank you for joining me here on Third Eye Cinema, and we hope to have you back again to discuss your next album.
Absolutely, man. Thank you very much, Gene. I appreciate your time and your interest, you know, with the band, and thank you very much for your time too, man. It's really a pleasure talking to you guys all the way on the other side of the world, and it's lovely chatting with everybody, and it's really nice to hear everybody's opinions on the album, and it's nice to get the praise, and it definitely boosts up our feelings more or less, and after all the shit that we went through, I'm sincerely wrapped that everybody's enjoying the album. Thank you, man.
Awesome. All right, so like I said, it was a pleasure, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Done deal, man. Look after yourself, okay? Keep in touch.
You too. Take care.
Cheers, bro. Bye, man.
And to close out our interview with Chris, this is the title track from the new album. Quick, call Fennell and Flansburgh, because we need to know how distant is the sun.
Alone.
for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Chris Pachanko at Vanishing Point. Next time on Third Eye Cinema, we head down to Bear Claw Tavern and pound back a few with Dave Kahn of Canadian pagan progressive metal band Scythia. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician and like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience. And next week...
This is Dave Gahn from the Canadian folk power metal band Scythia, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
And coming soon...
Name of the show is Third Eye Media, right?
Or Third Eye Cinema.
Cinema, okay. It says media here on my schedule. Okay, so Third Eye Cinema... So, hey, everybody, this is Pete Zug of Iron Savior, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Have fun and enjoy the ride.
Nice. And in just, I think it's 3 weeks.
Just for practice, how do I say this? Third Eye Cinema. Yeah, okay. Hello, this is Diana van Giersbergen from Xandria and the Clippers, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Nice. Very dramatic, too. I like that sort of Maria Callas approach.
Hey, that's what I do.
I know I heard Daughter of Corinth.
With 25% off all new and up to 70% off previously leased furnishings, do you really need a better reason to party? We don't think so. Come visit our new Court Furniture Clearance Center with more than 9,000 square feet of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home and office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. Free food, prizes, and fun all weekend long at our Chandelier Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway. Or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com.